Our reading this morning, which Dave will be focusing on a little bit later, is from Isaiah chapter 9, another prophecy looking towards the coming of the Messiah, the coming of Jesus. We'll be reading from verse 2 to verse 7. It's a wonderful passage with some great images. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as soldiers rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's really good to be here. Good to see some faces I recognise from Kate's induction. Kate said I ought to introduce myself. Well, I am Dave Hitchcock. I am a Baptist minister, trained at Spurgeon's College and all the rest of it, but I currently work for the Salvation Army. I'm one of the directors within one of the departments within the Salvation Army, and I work in a department that kind of deals with youth and innovation. That's what they call it. So, you know, YouTubers and tambourines. Yes, I've heard all the jokes. Thank you very much. Very kind of you, but it is fantastic to be here in a Baptist church, because I am a Baptist minister, so this is where I feel kind of most at home. I spend a lot of my time in Salvation Army services, and I was in one once, and not so very long ago, and the guy at the front said, I trust we're all Salvationists here, and I kind of put my head up and said, sorry, I'm a Baptist. He said, you're a Baptist. Why on earth are you a Baptist? I said, well, my mum was a Baptist, my dad was a Baptist, so I'm a Baptist. He said, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. If your mum was an idiot and your dad was an idiot, would that make you an idiot? No, it'd make me a Salvationist, I guess. So anyway, stop messing around. Not so much a three-point sermon this morning as a three-poem sermon, if that's okay. We've already read one of them. I know that the word poetry kind of strikes fear into the lives of most people, including myself. Three poems this morning. One we've already read, because what Kate read to us this morning from Isaiah chapter 9 is indeed a poem to a bunch of people who are in a shed load of trouble. Because, as you know, the people of God, in where we're talking, where we're looking this morning in Isaiah, are in exile. So that's one poem we're going to look at. And then I'd like to read a poem written by some friends in Oxford. I know that's slightly controversial, being that we're so very nearly in Cambridge here. And then at the end of our service, I'd like to read a poem which I have written, which still sounds kind of odd when I think back to my poetry in my English classes at school, and for a 6 foot 16 stone bloke to say, well, written some poetry, it still feels a little bit odd. But anyway, we'll give it a go, and if you don't like it, you just tell Kate never to invite me again. So here we are. So the first poem is that we meet in Isaiah chapter 9. And as I say, these people who heard this poem maybe for the first time are people who are in a great deal of trouble. Are they victims of circumstance? Probably. Is it their own fault? Most likely. Is it through the fault of others? Almost certainly. But these are different people. These are the people of God. These are people of hope. And that's what this poem's all about. It's about hope. And see, you see, people of hope see things differently. They have a different orientation on life. They expect different things. They allow a different authority to rule over their life. They have a different attitude to the future. God is with them now in the dark place where they find themselves here in chapter 9. He's here in the dark places. But they're looking forward to a time when the shining face of God is no longer hidden. A promise which will be fulfilled. Beyond the darkness, there comes a light. There is light at the end of the tunnel. And the great news is, it's not a train coming in the opposite direction. This is a great light. This is something to look forward to. This is something which is literally going to light up their lives. This poem, we should understand, is written in the past tense. If you read it, the people walking in the darkness have seen a great light. It's already happened. In the eyes of, or in the mind of the poet, in the mind of the prophet Isaiah, this is a foregone conclusion. This is a foregone conclusion. This would be like Simon standing up here and saying, West Ham 2, Chelsea 0 this afternoon. Is it this afternoon? It is this afternoon, isn't it? Okay. It's a foregone conclusion. This is going to happen. These people of hope understand their future and live out their present in light, in the light of what is going to happen. God is going to do something amazing. God, it's all about him. It's his doing. It's his enthusiasm. It's his idea. Later in the poem, we'll come across things that remind us of Moses, remind us of Gideon. Two great stories about deliverance, but deliverance which was okay, but not fantastic. You know, you get that postcard, don't you, of the children of Israel crossing the Red Sea. And one turning to the other and says, a bit muddy. And then if we read the story of Gideon in the book of the Judges, Judges is a great book and I'd encourage you to read it, but it's a real roller coaster ride where God's people in trouble, so they whinge and moan and God hears them and he delivers them out and they have a good time for a while and then they forget God and then they find themselves in a bad place and they moan and they whinge and God hears them and gets them back out of trouble. And that's the story of the story of Gideon and the story of the Judges. But this deliverance, which is coming, something that we can be sure of as people of God, this deliverance is going to be perfect. Light is going to be seen. Joy is going to be experienced. This is the kingdom of peace under the rule of a perfect king. People of God are in trouble, but God has promised deliverance. Well, that's all right then, so it doesn't really matter, does it, that they're all in trouble, that they're having a rough time, that nothing's quite as it should be, that families are broken up. No, of course that's not true. Of course that's not true. And I have to say that some of the most annoying Christians that I come into contact with are those people who, regardless of the situation, seem to think that, well, everything, even if your life's fallen apart, oh, well, it's all wonderful because God's in there somewhere. The darkness is real, but it's not the whole reality. It's true, but it's not the whole truth. The question is, how will we respond? How will the people of God respond? How did these guys respond? How will we respond? Will we just sit there and sulk and say, oh, God has forgotten us? Or will we remember his promises of old? Will we be like the hearers of this poem and remember that hope is always part of the equation. Time for a poem from Oxford, for which I apologise. The Christian looks back to the cross of Christ, engages in the mission of God in the present, and looks for the liberation of the future. Some people say life is a cycle. You're born, you grow up, you work, you grow old, you die. Some people say what will be, will be. Some people say there are no jobs, so no one will want me. Some people say there's always been war. What can I do about it? Some people say there will always be homelessness, and it's a shame. Some people say the world's a terrible place, and I want no part of it. Some people say, who knows what my life will be like tomorrow? I'll just wait and see. But hope says, rubbish. Hope helps you see a different reality, a world where anything is possible, not just for today, but for tomorrow. Hope helps you see not just what things could be like, but what today is like, but in a different light. Hope is not an empty promise or a dream or of escaping. Hope changes the colour of the world in which you live. Hope changes our faces, from the faces of the bored and the defeated to the faces of those who see life as an adventure. Life requires risk, experiment, adventure, possibility. In short, life requires hope. If there is no hope, there is no point. And with God, there is never no point. The people who hear the words of Isaiah for the first time are people of hope. Verse 1 talks about a land of Zebulun and a land of Naphtali. Interesting places to choose for the beginning of the poem, because this is where things started going wrong. These were the scenes where the Assyrians, oops, my destruction of your pulpit, for which I apologise. This is where things first started going wrong. These lands were linked with the invasion of the Assyrians, where God seemed to be absent for the first time. The darkest places, the worst places. And God says, out of all the places on the planet, this is where I'm going to bring light. This place which you see as the darkest of the dark places is where I am going to do something new, something brilliant. It will be like today, God saying, I am going to bring a healthy, fruitful, satisfying society into this world, and I'm going to start in Zimbabwe. I'm going to bring a land of peace and harmony where people understand people, where tribe will speak to tribe. And I'm going to bring that kingdom to bear in Afghanistan. It's that kind of feeling that we get in verse 1 of chapter 9. God is going to do something new. God is going to bring hope. Hope to the very darkest of all places. In verse 2 we read, the people walking in darkness have seen a great light, in the past tense. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned. Light and joy will be experienced through a child. Walking, these people have been living life where God seems to be absent, where God's face seems to be turned away. But the light is coming, and it's God's initiative. You've messed up, it's your fault. And God says, there's a second chance. We can have a break with our past. Doesn't matter who you are, whatever your circumstance, this poem says this. There's a second chance. We can start again. We can put the past behind us. Why? Because that's the kind of God that we worship and can have a relationship with. Verse 3, you have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as the people rejoice at the harvest, as men rejoice when dividing the plunder. God is going to bring a harvest. We're probably not very comfortable with the idea of dividing plunder these days. It sounds a bit kind of barbaric, doesn't it? But what the writer of these words is trying to say is that God is going to bring a blessing. And that blessing is going to be, you might look at it as a harvest, you might look at it as plunder, but the image that he's trying to create is an image that is, it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be bountiful. It's going to be good news to you from a health perspective. It's going to be good news from an economic perspective. It's going to be good news from a peace perspective. It's going to be good news from an emotional perspective. It's going to be good news from a shalom perspective. It's going to be good, great, fantastic news. And you can be a part of it. Here is a reason to celebrate. Verse 4. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Such words would have taken the first hearers back into history, back to the time of Gideon, back to the time of the judges, back to Moses, back to slavery. And it's a reminder that in those days, when they were in trouble a long time ago, when they've been in trouble before and they've cried out to God, he has heard them and he has brought them through. And there's a new time that's coming where there'll be no burden, where there'll be no blows, where there'll be no oppressor. The time of suffering, of toil, of stick and personal attack will come to an end. There is a conquest coming, a peace, where every warrior's boot used in battle, verse 5, and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. The battle is coming. But we don't enter the battle. The people don't enter the battle. All they do is they enter the land after the battle has been won. Has been won by a child. A child which is a gift of God. It's interesting. For unto us a child is born. We'll see it on countless Christmas cards this year. And this is where it comes from, of course. Interesting. Doesn't mention anything else. Doesn't mention Jesus growing up. Doesn't say that he'll have a great preaching ministry. Doesn't say that he'll have a great healing ministry. Doesn't say that he'll hang on a cross. Doesn't say that he's going to rise from the dead. Doesn't say that he's going to give the opportunity to people to have their lives put right with God. All it says is for unto us a child is born. And for people of hope, that's all you need to know. It's all you need to know that God is going to start something, because when God starts something, it always comes to his conclusion. So this child is going to be given to us. And the government will be on his shoulders. A contrast with the shoulders mentioned in the previous verse. Shoulders that are burdened and a yoke. A yoke that we find heavy. This child will take the burden on his shoulders. A wonderful counselor. Of course, a king. and his decisions will either make or break a kingdom. A kingdom that is eternal needs a perfect king. Such is that which comes with the birth of this child. An everlasting father, a care for his people. People ask for a king, don't they, in the Old Testament? Oh yeah, every other nation has got a king. Lord, can't we have a king? Can we have a king? Can we? Trust me, my people, you don't need a king. Let me be your king. No, give us a king. All right, we'll have Saul. Well, that didn't work out so well. We'll have David. Well, that didn't go so well either. And it wasn't very long before the last king made a mess of it and led them into this time of exile. There he's coming, an everlasting father, a consistent, wise father, an antidote to anxiety when life is out of control. I'm 44 now. My dad died 5 years ago, and I still miss him. Not that he was an Einstein, not that he was a font of great wisdom, not that he was great at anything in particular, but having him there just meant life was, well, if life got crazy and I didn't understand or got into trouble, somehow he was there to talk to. Not that he had great answers, but he was there all the same, and somehow that was good news. The promise in this child is that of an everlasting father. A prince of peace. Peace, we kind of limit that word, don't we, to peace, an absence of war. No, peace means well-being. Peace, the word shalom, means well-being in terms of, you know, in every aspect of our life. Not just an absence of war, an absence of negativity, but the presence of prosperity, the presence, a positive presence, freedom from anxiety, goodwill, harmony in relationships, the enjoyment of God's favour. The Prince of Peace will bring a peace between us and God and us and everybody else. This is the promise. This is the hope. A hope which is without limit, now and forever. And it's going to happen, because God's excited about it. God's jealous about it. God's zealous about it. God has a love for his people. This is the determination of Yahweh, the God of the Exodus, whose very nature is to save people and to give them hope. So how about us? How will we see 2008? Good year? Bad year? As a church, obviously, it's been a brilliant year, because Kate has arrived, and that's fantastic. But what about us personally, as we sit there in the pew this morning? Good year? Bad year? Have we allowed the child king to come and take over the government of our own lives in every aspect? It's only when we allow Jesus, this child, the promise of the poem, to come and affect every part of our life, our church life, our spiritual life, our home life, our relationship with our parents, our relationship with our kids, our relationships with our spouses, our marriages. We can't have the light, the honour, the joy, the abundance that's offered in this poem to the people of God, of whom we are part, unless we allow the child of Christmas to invade every part of our lives. This Christmas time, will we let the wonder, the hope of Christmas, invade every part of our lives? Or will we just keep him to Christmas morning, Christmas Sunday, the carol service, the cards on the mantelpiece. Life's confusing, isn't it, in 2008? And it's easy to get things muddled up. It's easy to compartmentalise Jesus into one part of our lives and not let him into the other. Time for the last poem, which must mean it's nearly the end of the service. Smiles break out across the congregation, Julie noted. This is a story, this is a poem that kind of tries to express how easy it is to get Christmas muddled up and not to allow Jesus full access to the whole of our lives. It's called Now and Then. Angels visit with amazing news, but my legs are killing me in the shopping queues. Virgins wonder and ponder on it. The cheapest item will be an ideal fit. Two pregnant girlfriends, birth mutual joy. Batteries are not included with this particular toy. Uncontrolled happiness is cue for a song. Funny looking potpourri with pungent pong. Pregnant fiance, perhaps I'll dump her. Wrong sized shirt and reindeer jumper. Caesar Augustus wants to do a count. More brandy butter and the calories mount. Tinsel and turkey, shepherds and wise men, Jesus and Christmas, every now and again. Bethlehem and David demand a trip, tape and paper that easily rips, journey on a donkey, girl about to burst, if you want your pudding, you've got to eat your Brussels first. Knocking on the door, looking for a place, turkeys by the dozen, sherry by the case. The pain of childbirth and bloody placenta, the ugly silence, the unwritten card that he really should have sent her. Wrapped and steaming and lying in a manger, another mouthful adds to the cholesterol danger. Crying in the straw and the sight of cattle drool, a set of spanners and some weird DIY tool. Tinsel and turkey, shepherds and wise men, Jesus and Christmas, every now and again. Shepherds minding their own, watching their flocks, aftershaven handkerchiefs and strange patterned socks. Angels show off in the clear night sky, go on, have another mince pie. Shepherds fall down and the heavens let rip. Where do satsumas come from if there is no pip? Glory to God and peace to men. Grandad has nodded off and is asleep again. Shepherds gather round and look aghast. 3 o'clock, BBC, the Queen's broadcast. Mary, Joseph, Jesus. Is that really it? Bespectacled old lady prattles on for a bit. Tinsel and turkey. Shepherds and wise men. Jesus and Christmas. Every now and again. Exit shepherds and enter kings, piles of rubbish and brand new things, drawn to the place by a moving star. Isn't it time to get the old back in the car? Frankincense, myrrh, and bright shining gold, kids running round, just not doing what they're told. Back on the camel via a different route, who's the weird looking guy in the bright red suit? Bethlehem's been fun, but it's time to go. Global warming means there's no more snow. Off to the land of pyramid and sphinx. Will I ever get through all this lynx? Tinsel and turkey, shepherds and wise men, Jesus and Christmas, every now and again. Herod's cheese is off and the children begin to scream. I'll wake up in a minute. It's just been a bad dream. News filters out and the families mourn. Angelic voices from choristers hanging on the lawn. And so begins a vulnerable life, and thick Christmas icing bends and buckles the knife. People walking in darkness have seen a great light. Why does monopoly always end in a fight? For unto us a child is born. Time to call it a day as the kids begin to yawn. The whole of humanity has been given a son. Another Christmas day has just been done. Tinsel and turkey, shepherds and wise men, Jesus and Christmas, every now and again. On his shoulders, the government will be. Worth all the planning? We'll wait and see. We shall call him Almighty God. Children and grandparents back in the land of Nod. Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Maybe next year we'll check out the church and the priest. And his righteousness, justice and peace will know no end. It's good to remember Jesus every now and then. Isaiah's poem reminds us, God with us, Emmanuel. Not a demon sitting on our shoulder making life a terror. Not a judge sitting on the other shoulder with the permanent tut. But God with us, good news. The God who is with us wants to turn our darkness into light, our conflict into shalom, our loss into abundance, our despair into joy. My friends, allow this poem, allow the child of this poem to enter your life, every aspect of your life, and enjoy Christmas and all the hope that it brings. Let's pray together. Let's pray.